struggling to meet demand.
Jeff Bezos needs to be the new host of the Radio 4 panel game Just a Minute.
The Skewer.
A twisted remix of the news.
In England, today's highest temperature was 35.7 million Celsius.
Satirical comedy created and produced by John Holmes.
I don't know him!
The Skewer.
Good, solid, British common sense.
Wednesday nights at 11:15.
On Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
It's extraordinary.
Now on Radio 4, the comedian Dalisa Chaponda concludes his series in which he looks at divisive global issues and how we deal with them. Today he's talking about change and how we adapt to it. This is Dalisa Chaponda, Citizen of Nowhere.
Recording the audio?
Yeah, that's recording the audio now.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Test, test, test.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Change.
Words and ideas can change the world.
And if you can't change it, then change the way you think about it.
Not everything that is face can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it's face.
Okay, the theme is change.
Be water, my friend.
You're a citizen of nowhere.
Citizen of nowhere, citizen of nowhere. Change!
And mine is rolling. Welcome to Citizen of Nowhere, and my guest today is writer, actor, Sibu Siso Mamba. We've known each other since we were 12, and we've ruined each other's lives in multiple fashions. It's great to have you as a guest. So welcome, welcome, Sibu.
Can you hear me?
I'm lip reading. Put your mic on in Zoom.
Oh.
Okay. Take two.
Okay.
Welcome to the show, Sibu Siso Mamba.
Thank you. I feel like I should whoop.
Okay, so what's going to happen is I'll explain what's going on to you.
Yes, please.
Before we start.
Yes.
There is no intro to the show, right? So I am going to make you read the intro about me. I'm going to do some stand-up comedy, so it's going to splice to them, and then I'm going to appear. So with pomp and circumstance.
Okay, here we go. The last 2 years have been difficult for all of us. We've dealt with uncertainty, loneliness, and for some, a total rethinking of priorities. To help you deal with every issue you've accumulated, welcome Dalisa Chaponda, the citizen of nowhere!
So the last 18 months got me thinking about all the ways we adapt. Coming out of lockdown, after 18 months alone, I think I'm in a desperation to be in a relationship. I used to be looking for intelligence, beauty, and passion. Now I'm just looking for a negative antigen test. I used to be trying to find the one. Now I'll take anyone. My standards are a lot lower. You have to adapt to change. There are people who resist it. Those are the ones you see still dressing like they're teenagers. There's nothing more disconcerting than seeing a granddad wearing an Adidas tracksuit. They look like a drug dealer, but one that only sells Viagra. It's changed for lots of people. Drug takers have been changed by the pandemic. Crack dens are now bring your own spoon. Many economies will have to adapt to a post-pandemic world. In an increasingly cashless society, 2021 will be the first year that even the tooth fairy considers using chip and pin. As I said, the show is about change. Now,
yes.
We met in what used to be called Swaziland.
Yeah.
Went to high school at a place called Swaziland, your home country. You are a Swazi, but now you are a Swatini.
Yes.
So what was the thought that after 40 years, we're changing our name?
My belief is the name change was an aesthetic change that the king made.
Yes.
He announced it on his birthday. Almost as if this is my birthday gift to you, my people.
Kings have very different birthdays from us. Like,
we
get a watch for his birthday. Let's change the name of the country. Is this true? So it says online that one of the reasons given for Swaziland
changing to Eswatini is to stop people being confused between Swaziland and Switzerland. Were they people who booked their holiday and they show up and they're like, where's the chocolate? What's show up with skis in Baban and saying, there's no snow here. There's no snow in Africa this Christmas.
This is very suspicious to me, Delisa, because I'm pretty sure that at some point I've heard that our own tourism department call Swaziland the Switzerland of Africa.
Oh, really?
I've heard that phrase used in a positive way. So I don't know.
Well, if you think about it, during the Second World War, Switzerland used to funnel Nazi gold.
Yeah.
During apartheid, Swaziland would get the South African gold to avoid the
sanctions. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe it is the Switzerland of Africa. Oh, also, how do you explain where it is in the world?
But one of the things that I used to like when I first moved to the UK, some people I met who'd never heard of Swaziland would go, Swaziland? That sounds like you've made it up. That sounds like
Zarmunda!
But does the fact that it's now called Eswatini make it easier to explain?
No, I'm like, Eswatini, they're like, I've never heard of this country. It used to be called Swaziland. Well, I've never heard of that country. Well, it went from being a country you've never heard of to another country you've never heard of.
Talking about change, that's a name change that my heart is just battling to accept.
The question I'd just like to ask is, what thing that has started happening during the pandemic do you hope we keep? Hello.
Hello.
So what do you hope we keep doing?
Trying to help out people who I live nearby to.
That's a great point. That's a great point. I didn't even know who my neighbors were. Now I know their names. I've babysitted for them. So that's a very great one. Anything else that you hope we keep?
Working in my pajamas.
Working in your pajamas. Yes. Yes. Any government member listening to the radio at this moment, can we just put that as an edict? It should be allowed. Anything else we want to keep?
Wearing masks. I don't like people seeing my face.
Oh, wearing masks. You don't like people seeing your face. There's nothing wrong with your face. It's quite cool. Well, you're far away from me, so. Fantastic. And now the opposite. Things which you hope we don't keep.
I'd like to get rid of the mask wearing because I like to see his face.
Oh. That is absolutely fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. I do like masks. I do like masks, but I like them recreationally. With a zip at the front and lots of leather. I would love to just roll into a supermarket with one of those masks. What inspired me to write about change is the pandemic and the way that it's made us all change. And you know, South Africa responded to the pandemic in the most bonkers fashion.
Yeah.
They banned booze and cigarettes.
Cigarettes, yeah.
I think if they tried to do that in the UK, there would have been riots. Can you imagine? It would have been like the revolution, Cromwell part two. It also doesn't make sense because what are the symptoms of alcohol and cigarette withdrawal? Coughing, headaches. But that's South Africa. Like, how did the pandemic change your life?
Oh, my goodness. I had been traveling for probably 2 years straight, working all over Central and East Africa, including your lovely country, Malawi.
Yes.
And one of the biggest changes is spending every single day with my children. That has been extraordinary.
Now, look, how old are your children?
6 and 4.
Okay, so they can't understand this show anyway. So I can ask you, is this a good thing or a bad thing, having to spend all this time with them?
Oh my goodness, an amazingly good thing.
Reconnecting with your family.
Yeah, yeah, reconnecting with my children who on Skype just went, oh, hello, and were more interested in, you know, it was Skype. We realized I said Skype, not Zoom.
Not Zoom.
Because before the pandemic, I mean, come on. Did you use Zoom before the pandemic?
You know all these conspiracies people have about who created the virus, right? Thinking it was Bill Gates or whatever. I think if we were looking, I would say, who owns Zoom, right? These are people who have gained.
Yes.
And if we find out that the people who own Zoom also manufacture masks, We've got to the bottom of it.
That's so true.
I was inspired a lot by how people adapted to the change.
Yeah.
There were lots of little inspiring adaptations which people did to this bizarre world we were living in.
There was a reverend who came up with the idea of using chopsticks to serve communion. Why didn't she go all the way? Dumpling instead of communion wafers. Churches started taking drive-through confessions. And I actually think they should keep doing this post-pandemic, do a deal with fast food services. And you can drive in and say, I would like a burger, fries, and forgiveness for the deadly sin of gluttony. Another vicar in America started baptizing babies with water pistols full of holy water. It's ironic that this is in America, introducing a child into the world by shooting at them. At least it gets them used to it, I suppose.
If you had to say the biggest thing that changed your life,
yeah.
I think for me, interestingly, you were there for this in high school,
yeah.
And I wrote a short story, and we had a very effusive teacher called Mrs. Hall,
yeah.
And she loved my story and kept going on about how great it is and told me to read it to everyone in class. And when I read it, people were laughing and people were responding. And that 11-year-old became a comedian on that day. That moment changed me because I was like, oh my Lord, I like this. I like making stuff up and people responding.
Yeah.
That was me deciding what I want to do.
I love that because I remember that. I remember that change happening in you. And then you became uncontrollable.
Yes, there was no stopping me.
Well, that was it. It's funny because I was there for your change. And you were there for mine.
Interesting.
But let me actually put it differently.
Okay.
You were the cause of mine.
Oh!
Yeah. So you are to blame for the change that happened. Okay. Same school, wonderful times, especially in the 90s, when change was happening all around Southern Africa.
Oh, yes. Also, like, to the audiences, this was like a school set up to fight apartheid. It was a very idealistic school, wonderful education.
Yeah, and started by people who had lived in South Africa and seen apartheid happen as teachers and decided that they wouldn't teach in that system. And here we are, we're 16, 17, and you had constantly tried to get me into a drama club that you were doing.
Yes.
And I didn't understand what drama was. I didn't have theater growing up. I didn't have any of that. But you had decided that I was going to play Fresh Prince of Sidwash in your adaptation, and you are like, you would make a great Will Smith character in the skit, and you gave it to me, and I kept saying no, I kept saying no, and then you just put the pages of the script under my room door, and I read it, and I was hooked. I was like, this is so funny. Everything in me was screaming, you have to do it, you have to do it. And you directed it, and you were also in it.
It was like, do everything.
So I did that, and then...
And now...
26 years later.
Wow.
And here we are.
It's your job now. It's your actor, your writer.
It's my life, everything. I act, I write, I direct, I produce, all of it. It's my life. And I've always said, if someone goes, so who do you blame for your life? I say, Dalisa Chaponda.
I'm very proud of it.
Because you need that in your life.
You do.
People who push you, who can see versions of you that you can't see yet.
One barrier to adapting is fear, right? It's a risk that you may end up in a worse situation than you're in right now. Everyone has made that gambit at least once in your life, when you're in a relationship or a job and you're like, I've had enough, and you leave, and in a week you want it back because you're like, I want to change, but not into this. I think there's a case of people not want to leave a situation because we sort of look at relationships like investments. You're like, you've been with someone for 4 years. I've invested all this time. And you're thinking, if I stay with them, maybe their shares will gain value. We're also very aware of the possibility that our own share value has dropped. That was a cry from the heart, my friend. Okay, so a few years ago, this is totally true. A few years ago, I had the chance to be with someone who essentially was like the perfect woman for me. Like, we laugh, we talk for hours. I've been physically attracted to her for like 20 years. She understands me, I understand her. And it almost happened and I messed it up. I was afraid of the change, right? My life wasn't great, but if I was with this person, it would change. Change is gigantic. Now she's with someone new. And when she met him, I realized he was a lot more like her and they had the same values, so I accepted it. But now occasionally, when he pisses her off, I find myself thinking, I missed my moment. That could be me. I could frustrate you. I could disappoint you. That's entirely within my capabilities.
There's some point where sometimes you have to make a certain risk to change things, which I understand people being afraid of.
So this is something that I write about quite a lot, that kind of fear of change.
Oh, really?
And one of the things that I think lockdown did for a lot of people was force them to make changes in their lives that they didn't want to make.
Some people's relationship was kept together by scarcity.
Yes.
I see them for 1 hour a day and we are happy. But and I have to spend fine. 4 hours with them. This has got to go.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just remembered it's not relevant to this, but I told your ex-wife that you had a new partner.
I'll take it even further. You didn't just tell her I had a new partner. You told her I was having a baby.
Yes! You know what? I'm just going to tell the story, okay? So we are all old friends. I am good friends with your ex-wife. And I meet her on Valentine's Day. I happen to be performing near where she lives. And I take her out for like lunch just to catch up. We're chatting. And in the middle of the chat, she's like, have you seen Sibu, right? And I say, yes, but I said it. I knew you have a pregnant new partner. And I could see from her face, she doesn't seem emotionally affected. So I'm like, I don't think you know what's going on. So I told her in this restaurant and everybody's looking at me like, have you broken up with this person on Valentine's Day? What a bad man. It was such a crazy situation.
You see the changes you have brought into my life.
Yes. I feel like we've been living in a soap opera for years.
Yeah.
Like literally, I don't know who's writing the script, but we've been living in a soap opera.
Yeah.
People in new relationships will always say that there is nothing they would change about their partner. While people who have been married for years have spreadsheets with drop-down menus. I'd like to explain the things I would change in four categories.
We've been very positive in that we've talked about things when we've changed for the better. Things like the pandemic have come and we've adapted in good ways. But unfortunately, there are many times when big events cause us not necessarily to adapt in the right way. So if you look at like 9/11, there was an increase in xenophobia, anti-Asian hate, even just, you know, people get very patriotic. And I'm very suspicious of patriotism.
Clap your hands. Who considers themselves a patriot? No. Okay, who loves their country? Okay, quite a lot of people. Because I actually think that we do or say patriotic stuff under pressure. Like, if I'm ever in an interview and someone says, do you love your country? Well, you have to say yes. Do you support the troops? You have to say, yeah, we say patriotic things because that's the only option, right? Why must I love my country? Can't we just be friends, you know? Why is the country so clingy? I like you. I just don't love you. The other weird thing about patriotism is people claim credit for stuff they had nothing to do with. Like when their team wins, people go nuts and, yeah, we beat them. You had nothing to do with it. Another example is people who say, if it wasn't for us, you would be speaking German. I know what they mean, but that's such odd phrasing, as though the distasteful part was the language itself. D voice consonants, glottal stops. No, not glottal stops. But I also will say that sometimes it is advantageous to pretend to be more patriotic than I actually am. there is a subset of white women who exoticize black culture. They're, I'm trying to find a radio-friendly way to say it. They are excited by Africa and Africanness. I was approached by one of these women, and she kept asking me about Malawi, telling me things like, oh, how do you say this in Chichewa? I have bad Chichewa, I don't know. But at the same time, I wanted to impress this woman, so I just made up words. I just went, Amaka, Wajigwala, I just made up words. And after we broke up, she ended up going on a trip to Malawi, and I was like, oh my Lord. She's gonna try the words I taught her, isn't she? I think a little nationalism is healthy, but there's always a turning point where it's too much. I think this is the thing. It's like, it's one thing to say, I love my country, and it's another thing to say, my country is the best. It's better than all of your countries. And I think it's the best way I look at it, it's like talking about your wife. If you're at a dinner party and you say, my wife is so beautiful, fine. But if you're like, my wife is the best, better than all your wives, why do all these foreigners keep trying to get into my wife? That's when we lose our way.
There was a time, I think, for a lot of people, particularly in that first wave of lockdown, where everybody went,
yeah,
okay, you know what? I'm going to make the best out of this.
Yes.
And I think that's the beauty of change in a way. The sweet spot happens when we have a choice about how we relate to it.
Yes. I also think, you know, this thing of people learning the wrong lesson. This reminds me of, there was something which you were here for, which is when my bank blocked my account.
Yes.
And yeah, I couldn't access my money. It's really odd when it happens, because you can still log into your account. You can look at your money, but you can't touch it. It's like a strip club. And I was looking through all of my money going in and out, and I was trying to figure out what made them get overly paranoid and think that I was actually, you know, a terrorist. And then I saw that I have one investor in my last DVD called Ahmed Bin Laden. I think I understand. Now, clearly I'm making a joke, but the joke works because we do have these certain prejudices. And if I was dealing with someone with an Arab name, or I had like three Nigerian investors, which was the case, but that puts you in the situation that, hey, if a legit businessman has an Arab-sounding name or an African-sounding name that people don't trust, it's okay to discriminate against them? No! We need to start trusting people with foreign names, and we need to start here. I'm Chaponda. After the show, to show that we are all against xenophobia, email your bank details and password to the following address. I actually think the biggest change for society is not from ideas, it's usually from technology. Now it's phones. Like, we carry mobile superpower computers in our pockets. And one of the biggest changes at the table in my generation, parents would be saying, no chewing with your mouth open. Now it's no devices at the table. That is the number one thing. And could you imagine if when we were kids, it was no devices at the table? I would have been like, but Mom, I love the toaster. You know, the way that I was talking about how there's more hate. Maybe it's not because of the pandemic. Maybe it's also because of things like the algorithms on things like Facebook encourage you to yell at each other. I don't know how the world is changing with kids growing up with these little supercomputers in their pockets, but I'm sure we'll know in like 20 years.
When my 6-year-old found out that when I grew up, we didn't have YouTube, he was very upset for me.
Really?
He said, you didn't have YouTube, but did you have food? That was the next thing he went to in his mind.
That was the next thing.
He's like, what else did you lack?
Well, you know, in China,
yeah,
they have got certain hours where people can't play video games.
Oh.
Because they control it, right?
They've shut it down, yeah.
And it's interesting, whenever you hear people talking about how much
it's repressive there. That's one which when I tell parents, they're like, oh, that's a good idea.
That's yeah, I know.
As you're saying that,
I'm like, not accessible?
So what we're saying to all the British public, if you want your kids to grow up more well-rounded, we need to act like despots. Boris Johnson, if you're listening, ban video games before 6 p.m. Restrict internet. Wear a military uniform. Like, I know it doesn't seem like, trust me, it helps.
And then change the name of the country on your birthday every year.
And people often ask, how can Africans laugh about Trump or Boris Johnson? How can we make jokes and laugh about the silliness of some of the leaders in the West when we had Idi Amin and we had Gaddafi? The difference is you elected them. These guys just took power.
Talking of change, it was great to be in that particular school as the region was changing.
That we were there. We were at school for the ending of apartheid.
Yeah. It felt like you were right at the forefront
of
those changes.
We were right in it. We demonstrated also. I don't know about you, but I felt like we were responsible. I was like, we did it.
Oh my God.
We did
it.
Because in little ways, we used to like go demonstrate and we used to write things. Yeah. And I think I've been so ambitious in my life. Partly because I was in this school, which made me think that, oh, we can change the world.
Yeah.
We can do it. And I think most people are so much more cynical than that.
Yeah. I would not change a thing about that because
yeah,
I think
absolutely.
If it hadn't been for going to Waterford, I would not have even thought that I could be an actor in the big wider world.
You know, there's sometimes a lot of frustration from older people by how the world is changing. And I'm like, it's not your world anymore. Right?
Yeah.
Part of what happens is there's a changing of the guard. It's the kids' world now. And maybe you miss some things about the world that was your world, but you've also got to accept that we're like custodians and it's now the kids' world. You don't discuss these things in school. You don't have these kind of robust debates about controversial stuff. And you need to have them at the kid level. Not at the adult level.
The kids need to be having these debates, yeah.
Yeah, we would argue passionately about this stuff.
Yeah.
Even like the themes we're interested in. Like this series of Citizen of Nowhere talks about blame and black history. And this one's about change. All of these big, lofty things I aim to, I can draw a direct line to being in this school, which made us think about South Africa needs to change for the better. How does it change for the better?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's amazing. There's so much possibility with kids to be better versions of us.
We could have learned in this last year and a half not to trust people, to hoard things, to be extra suspicious, or we could have learned to value everybody we know. And I usually end every episode of Citizen of Nowhere with a joke. But I am ending this series with sincerity because I didn't realize how much I enjoyed performing comedy until it was gone. So thank you so much for listening and letting me do it again. Thank you.
Citizen of Nowhere was written and performed by Deliso Chaponda, with additional material by Scott Bennett. Deliso's guest was Sibu Siso Mumba. It was produced by Carl Cooper and was a BBC Studios production.
Thank you.